You're listening to the Glass City Church Podcast.
So, Jeff, this is our fifth podcast. Count them 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5.
You're good at that. That's
nice. I know. I'm good at counting. Every time I think about counting, for some reason, I always think of the Count from Sesame Street.
Oh, that's
one
nice.
Podcast. No? No? Okay. Anyways, so it's our fifth podcast. So super crazy to think we're on our fifth one already. I know it sounds kind of silly, but hopefully we can even be even more amazed when we're on podcast 500. Here's hoping, right?
Sure.
So we're in a little bit of a new venue tonight. We're in your office.
We are.
And I'm liking the acoustics so far right now.
It feels right.
Yeah, it feels good.
It just feels right.
It just feels right to you. Okay. Well, how you been, man?
I've been good. I've been loving this Christmas season in terms of just getting to just really preach the promise that God fulfilled in what we celebrate at Christmas time, and getting to do the things that in my family, like we love, like the Andrew Peterson Behold the Lamb of God tour. Yeah. We try to go. We've gone more years than we haven't. He's been going a lot in the South lately, but this year he's up in Cincinnati and he did it. He has like a live stream for it and all that stuff. So I just really enjoy watching the way that other Christian artists are creative around the concept of Christmas. Yeah. Peterson does it through the Old Testament, the coming of Christ through the Old Testament, which is mm-hmm. super cool. But yeah, so that and just trying to love people during this crazy time of year, because everyone's driving. It seems like everyone drives crazier. The stores are more crowded. Even the grocery stores, people are fighting over carts and things like that.
If you're not throwing elbows, you're not doing it right.
I guess so, but yeah. So love this time of year. It's really cool. So
yeah. You know, it's funny that you mentioned music. I've been listening to Ben Rector a lot lately. I'm sure you know Ben Rector, right?
Yeah, I saw him up in Detroit back in November.
Yeah. And so I'm sure. I mean, obviously, you're aware he fancies a good love song.
He does. He sure knows how to cause people to swoon.
Tickle the ivories.
Yes, he does indeed.
Yeah. So Jeff, why is love good? Why is God's love good?
So earlier this year, we preached through the book of 1 Corinthians, which was super cool. And, we got to chapter 13, the love chapter. And we came up with a working definition of love. And I'm just going to read it off. And if you go to Glass City or you listen to our sermons online, you've already heard this. But love is a strong affection toward or regard for a person and their good as understood by God's moral character, especially characterized by a willing forfeiture of rights, privileges, comfort, and convenience for the benefit of another. And so obviously love is, God's love is good because, it is for our benefit. Like it's not based on our ability to deserve or earn anything at all, because without God's love, we would just be completely lost. I mean, he loved us so that we could love one another. God's love is good because, man, without it, we would just be lost.
Mm. Yeah. And so when we talk about love, many evangelicals have kind of a theological bent. They get in kind of two different camps when they talk about God's love. Of either they go in a grace heavy approach, or they go into a wrath heavy approach or focus. So, what does a balanced view of both look like? Because obviously, God is a God of both of justice and of wrath, but also of love, grace, and mercy.
Yeah, and I think this is a really interesting way to kind of look at our human. I was just having a conversation this afternoon with a guy about how we are really uncomfortable with tension. Mm. We like black and white. We like, the polarizing things, because that makes it kind of it makes it settled. Yeah. It's like, oh, well, okay, I'm going to focus on or really major on God's wrath. Well, now I don't have to really, you know, think about things in terms of his love and vice versa. Mm-hmm. You know, we think the grace heavy approach forgets about the debt that we have. You know, forgets about in the garden in the beginning. There was sin, and sin caused. The wages of sin is death. There's this debt that Christ came to pay on our behalf. And so when we're just all about love, in terms of it feels good, we just want to hug and it just ignores the fact that, yes, that love is real. The problem is, if we don't realize what that love had to overcome in order for us to be, reconciled to God, yeah. then God's grace seems cheap because it was just kind of there. Whereas the wrath heavy approach, they forget that the debt has been paid in full. And so it's almost like either one of those is kind of reductionistic where I'm either going to forget about the fact that I am a sinner in need of grace, in need of a savior, or, that God's wrath is just, is just this horrible, menacing, devastating thing that we are always going to live in fear of. And I'm not talking about the healthy, fear of God that every believer should have, yeah. But where we're looking at God as just, this capricious, mean, temper tantrum prone, it's just where he's not loving. And so, and you have to look at both because they're both part of God's character. And so it's holding those two in tension, that seems to be challenging. And a lot of times we'd just rather look at one or the other.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I mean, it's easy to try to understand both of those and kind of put God in a box in the process of trying to understand and not be uncomfortable.
Yeah, because we want something we can manage.
Of course.
And you can't manage something when there's tension there. Like there's it's this ongoing, checking to make sure, it's like there's always, we're never going to just be able to ignore God's role in something and just kind of, pigeonhole him as one or the other.
Yeah. Or even if there's mystery there too.
Mm-hmm.
Because how can God, there's kind of a mystery there of how can God be loving and how can he also be just and have wrath, and you can get into those kind of questions if you dig a little bit deeper and further into it. And we often don't like mystery for the same reason, because we as Americans don't have the ability to understand it fully.
Well, sure, and I think that there's, I mean, you can come up with like imperfect kind of analogies for it. I mean, like anyone who's a parent, understands wrath and grace in a limited way, because we are imperfect and sinful ourselves, and so we can't really, come to a complete understanding of that. And a lot of times, if we can't understand something, we don't want to deal with it. But like, I mean, I have days where my kids, my love for them is overshadowed by my wrath for, they shot my nice TV with a bow and arrow and just destroyed it.
When did that happen again?
This was years ago. And
still haven't gotten over yet?
No, I have gotten over it. It's just a great example of how those two kind of commingle in an imperfect way for us humans. And so we can kind of understand it in a limited way.
Yeah, of course. Of course. So in a postmodern world that holds self-love supreme, so looking at a different approach of this, what should or how should the believer look at themselves biblically in our current society?
Yeah. So I think, I mean, I agree that love is supreme, but it's God's love that's supreme. Like God's love is the end all. And love always bears a cost. Otherwise, it's not love. It's just infatuation.
Yeah.
And so, like when we dumb down the word love, when we desensitize, when our understanding of it gets boiled down to, I love pizza. I love music. I love guitars.
I love lamp.
I love lamp. We're actually misusing that word. It's liking something or having a strong. A strong desire for something is not the same as loving something, which again, we're just being lazy and we're not actually using that word for what it truly means. And then that just kind of, so the world sees love as supreme. Well, not really, because in every conceivable way, If that love is not based in and sourced from God, then it's selfish. Yeah. So much of our what we love is for selfish reasons. Like, I love my wife, but man, a lot of what I love about my wife is because she makes me feel good, or she makes me feel loved, you know. And the minute that isn't true, man, those feelings of love seem to go away.
Yeah. So, continuing the topic on love, understanding God's love for believers who have been, and these are, I'm talking about Bible-believing Christians who have been rattled by past sin, that have blown it in very big ways, and their default is to be performance-driven or even have self-hatred for themselves. What hope does the Bible have to those believers?
Well, the Bible gives us hope in that it's not about us. Okay, and so one of the ways that we've been talking about that is our faith is not religion. Religion is what we do to get to God, and our faith is what God has done to come to us, right? To love us, to engage us, to ransom us. And so, you know, when we talk about past sins, we talk about being performance driven. We think about that from a religious mindset. We're going to, and I'm totally robbing this from somebody. I don't know who I'm quoting right now, but it's definitely not an original quote. That religion leads to either pride or despair.
Yeah.
Because if I'm, you know, if I had past sins, but now I'm really hitting, batting 1,000, and you know, I've been able to you know, modify my behavior to stop doing certain things. Now I'm prideful.
This backwards thinking.
Yeah. And whereas, you know, if I'm just like, oh my gosh, I keep blowing it in this area, I keep doing, you know, it a religious mindset that leads to despair, because you know, ultimately we're putting our hope in ourselves.
Yeah.
Whether we're really nailing it or whether we're really blowing it, if we have a religious mindset, it's all about us. And I think the hope the Bible offers is that it's not about us. Mm-hmm. You know, that God sent Christ, that we're going to celebrate here at Christmas, knowing full well the cost that He would pay, knowing full well our just complete and utter need for Him. And that it's never been about us. You know, I mean, Ezekiel 36 talks about, you know, God tells Israel, you know, it's not for your sake, but for the sake of my name that I'm about to act. You know, when he's talking, he's for, you know, kind of prophesying about, you know, the salvation that will come through Christ is, you know, and so the hope is that it's not about us. The hope is that God's love is not predicated on our ability to earn His love. It's not predicated on our ability to maintain any sort of a moral code or performance record. That's not to say that we don't respond to that love with a desire to be obedient.
Yeah,
because that's where a lot of the antinomian kind of thing goes. Is like, you know, let sin abound that grace may abound all the more. I feel like Paul says something about that. You know, by no means.
Maybe.
He's very strong in his.
It might be unclear whether or not.
Yeah, right. Yeah, we're still getting to the original language on that. No, but so
that was
yeah,
just a joke, by the way.
Yeah. Please don't email us. So yeah, the hope that the Bible offers is that Christ's love is not because we are good, but because He's great.
Yeah,
and that's the bottom line.
Yeah, and it's super insidious because it masquerades when we have that pride. It masquerades itself as self-piety of, well, I'm just the worst. I'm in almost this weird, deceitful, look how holy I am, but I'm really just self-focused. And it's just this insidious circle that...
Well, the bottom line is when you are doing well, like now you get judgmental, now you get legalistic.
Yeah.
And pretty soon you're starting to impose any of your extra-biblical laws, extra-biblical rules and regulations on other people, and it's just self-righteousness. And Isaiah says our self-righteousness is like rags that are filthy. Yeah. And, man, I'd much rather have the righteousness that comes from Christ. I feel like that's a better call.
Yeah. The hymn was not wrong. Prone to wander, Lord, I feel it even when we're doing good and we're doing
poorly. Ooh, Lord, I lift your name on high. Yeah, that's a good song. Yeah. You're right.
Anyways, well, thanks, Jeff. Thank you for your wise words. Come check us out on glasscitychurch.org. Subscribe to the podcast. We're on Facebook and Instagram. Come check us out, and hopefully you can join us for our Christmas Eve service on the 24th, which is Christmas Eve.
I was wondering if you're going to get that date right.
What's the time, Jeff?
6:30 p.m. It's going to be hot.
What songs are we going to be singing, do you know?
I haven't even figured that out yet.
Okay.
Yep.
What do you think we're going to be singing?
I think we're going to be singing Onward Christian Soldier just over and over and over again.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Just in monotone with no...
Yeah, it'll be acapella. Yeah, it'll just be... No. We'll do some good songs.
Heard. All right. Well, thanks, Jeff, again. Hope you guys have a good rest of your week.
You've been listening to the Glass City Church Podcast. For more content or more information about Glass City Church, visit our website at www.glasscitychurch.org.